This is a download from the BBC. To find out more, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.
It's a bit more breathing space. That's how the Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras described his plea for more time to a German newspaper this morning. Later on, he's meeting Jean-Claude Juncker. He's the head of the group of Eurozone finance ministers as part of his attempts to convince leaders that Greece is doing enough to justify the next instalment of its bailout and they deserve a bit of a break, specifically 2 extra years to get their budget deficit down to the 3% target. Later this week, he'll also be meeting French President François Hollande and, crucially, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. So will he get what he's after? Yanis Varoufakis is a professor of economics at the University of Athens. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, sir.
Now, the deal was to bring the deficit down to 3% by 2014, but as they cut pensions and salaries, their tax revenue go down, and therefore Greece continues to fall behind on its debt-cutting targets. This seems like a vicious circle bound to perpetuate itself, no?
This is almost an understatement of the tragedy that is unfolding in Greece at the moment. It's not just that austerity is feeding the deficit and then the deficit is giving rise to more demand for fresh loans, which then come attached with austerity strings, and thus perpetuating the vicious cycle. We have something far worse happening. We have a complete collapse of the circuits of credit, of banking provisions for the private sector, for businesses. Even profitable firms find it impossible to raise cash and funding for their profitable projects. So the social economy of Greece is in a complete disarray, in a death trap.
If that's the case, then asking for 2 more years will make no difference.
It will make things worse. I very much fear that this mistaken demand or petition by our Prime Minister is going to be granted. And this is not going to be more breathing space. It will be more rope for the Greek social economy to hang itself with.
So you're saying that the worst possible thing to happen would be is if Mr. Samaras gets what he wants. Let's just look at the chances of that, because he's meeting Mr. Juncker today. He represents all finance ministers, but some are being tougher than others. Finland, for example, has been playing hardball over this. They went through their own crisis without any help. So do you think there may be elements within the Eurozone who will say enough's enough and bring this to a timely close if what you say is right?
Well, I think that you're quite right. It's actually worse than that. What we have is a situation where it's a common knowledge amongst our European partners that Greece is off the tracks and it's crashing and derailing badly. But that it's not their concern at the moment. Their main concern is how to salvage the Italian and Spanish train wrecks.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the reason Greece is being humoured in this way, and in fact is being victimised, you would say, is because of Italy and Spain. And in fact,
because the Eurozone has not decided what to do with Italy and Spain. And until and unless they decide what to do with Italy and Spain, Greece is going to be in suspended animation, and the crisis is going to be festering, the wound is going to be getting worse, and Greece is simply going to be given, at best, a perpetuation of its tragedy without a resolution. Okay. Europe should make its mind up, either chuck Greece out of the Eurozone or give it terms and conditions that can allow Greece to survive within the Eurozone.
OK, Mr. Yanis Varoufakis, Professor of Economics at the University of Athens, thank you. My markets guest this morning is Justin Urquhart-Stewart, co-founder and director of Seven Investment Management. It's all gone a bit quiet on the Eurozone lately, hasn't it? In fact, the markets themselves, US stocks yesterday hit a 4-year high. How long is that going to last? Or is this a calm before another storm?
This has been quite astonishing, hasn't it? It's not so much no news is good news, but certainly less news appears to be in good news. And as a result of it, you've seen the markets actually rip away. Compare this with this time last year, where during August we actually saw the credit rating of America being warned about, and we saw the Euro stocks market drop by some 20%. But be careful. The calm before the storm, September and October is the season of storms and not just meteorological ones.
Well, funnily enough, David Costin, who's the US equity strategist at Goldman Sachs, in his latest note to clients, he's pleading with them to take money out of stocks before they fall off a cliff. But his motivation is slightly different. He's got US concerns.
Yes, the fiscal cliff. That's to say, the changing of their tax rules over there, which will be coming up. And also, of course, the debt ceiling as well has to be agreed. So, yes, investors need to be careful here. Now, whether you sell out or not, or you have investment insurance to protect you on the downside, this is where you need some clear, careful portfolio management.
Now, we've been tracking the plight of Facebook as its shares now less than half what they were sold at. Peter Thiel, however, the internet tycoon, one of the first backers, he sold most of his stake, $1 billion worth. Him getting out almost completely is quite a bad message for the long-term holders.
That's a really bad sign for anybody, actually, the new issue. The new issue, you're not there just to actually try and make people very rich by allowing them to sell out straight away. It is to enable them to be rewarded but keep their investments in. It's a very bad sign. Hugely overpriced. Be very wary of all new issues, particularly fashion fads like this. They turn out to be embarrassments later on.
OK, Justin Nuckett, Stuart, thank you very much indeed. Now, you would have got rich if, over the last 10 years, you'd been investing in commodities. Copper and tin have risen sixfold, gold by a factor of 7, silver by a factor of 9. Now, this boom came after a period of low prices in the 90s, meant there was little investment in finding new sources. When economies of the East started expanding rapidly, new supply was always lagging behind demand, and we got what was termed a commodity supercycle. But is that changing? Chinese growth slowing, new finds coming on stream. Is supply finally catching up with demand? I spoke to Rashir Sharma, Managing Director and Head of Emerging Markets at Morgan Stanley, and Jim Rogers, co-founder with George Soros of the Quantum Fund, to find out what they thought. Jim Rogers said the commodities boom has a long way still to go.
Throughout history, we've had long cycles, Simon, when commodities have been in a bull market, followed by long cycles when they were in a bear market, and then followed by long rising cycles again. I mean, this has been going on for a few hundred years. It's not magic. It's because supply and demand get out of balance. And when they're out of balance, the cycle's gone for a long time. It takes a long time to find enough oil. It takes a long time for consumption patterns to change.
And you think we're still in the middle of that, that there is still a supply-demand mismatch?
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, I don't see any new supply, a significant new supply, to bring this bull market to an end. Governments will then print money. It's the wrong thing to do, Simon, but that's all they know to do. And throughout history, when governments have printed money, it's just made the demand even more intense, and therefore this cycle has a ways to go.
Rashir Sharma, you don't take that view. What has changed? Why is the recent boom, you think, coming to an end?
If you look at the history of commodity prices going back 200 years, the broad trend is that commodity prices in inflation-adjusted terms tend to decline over time. And I think that we are at that point. We have had a decade of very strong commodity prices because of the supply and demand mismatch. But I think that now things are changing for two reasons. One, China is moving to a much lower growth trajectory. It's become too large to grow that quickly. And its model is changing now from being that commodity intensive to being less so. And two, I think that the supply response is coming. So if you look at things like oil, we are finding discoveries in new places, unconventional oil coming on stream. It takes time, you know, for these things to happen, but it's coming on. And the long trend in commodity prices that we see, as I said, is down.
What about that argument, though, that if, as you print more money, you need more of that printed money to buy the same amount of hard commodities, that is a store of value which is being eroded by monetary policy?
The long-term history suggests that what money printing does influence is the prices of commodities such as gold, which is seen as a store of value, not food and other industrial commodities. Those are much more demand-sensitive.
Isn't that right, Jim Rogers, that printing money may influence the price of gold, but it's not going to influence the things that can perish, like food?
Nothing moves up together, even when you have a bull market in stocks. The main determinant for commodities are supply and demand. And if you don't have enough supply, I assure you that the prices are going to go higher. But, Simon, even more importantly is we're running out of farmers. Virtually nobody has gone into agriculture in the past 30 years because it's been a disaster.
All right, if that's true and we've got a food shortage, some people would say you're exacerbating the problem that speculators, people making bets on long-term food prices going up, are actually pushing prices up and actually making what is a real socioeconomic problem a lot worse.
Simon, you better hope that somebody drives up the price of food. Let me explain again. We're running out of farmers, Simon. Nobody studies agriculture. We don't have young people going into agriculture because it's been a horrible business. Until farmers can make money, where's the food going to come from?
If you're right, then we're looking at inflation, we're looking at potential famines, civil unrest.
Yes, Simon, you're already seeing it. Why do you think you've had these revolutions in the Middle East? Tunisia started because of food prices. Egypt started because of food prices. I don't particularly like saying this. Something has to happen or we're not going to have enough food.
Rashir Sharma, if you're right, the world economy slows because China, the engine of growth, begins to sputter. You'll then get civil unrest because all the people who've come from the fields in China into urban centres for manufacturing purposes will now have nothing to do. That will create a political problem. You know, if you're right, that the future doesn't look much brighter either.
No, I don't agree with that assessment. I think that we're entering into a new era, which the China's growth rate is not going to crash. It's essentially maturing, just like the other miracle economies in the past, such as Japan in the 1970s and Korea and Taiwan in the 1980s and 1990s. Their economies also went through a similar maturing phase, which did not lead to any riots, but it was just accepting the fact that you're too large to grow that quickly. And in fact, I see a lot of beneficiaries from lower commodity prices. I think that high commodity prices are just the wrong kind of economic incentives. And lower commodity prices will benefit a lot of countries, from Turkey to India to possibly even the developed world, such as the United States, which have been feeling the effect of high commodity prices over the past decade. And China's slowdown, if it's going to be managed right, I think is going to be fine. On a 3-5 year basis, I also feel that the price of oil is going to be much lower rather than much higher.
Okay, and Jim Rogers, the best performing commodity in the same sort of time frame?
Well, I'm bullish on all commodities. I own all commodities, I should say. I would pick whatever agricultural products are down the most and start there. I mean, sugar, believe it or not, is down 75 or 80% from where it was 38 years ago, Simon. Do you know anything that's 75% cheaper than it was in 1974? Not much.
Not much.
That's the situation in agriculture.